Hey, Soil Nation, Mitchell Hura here with the Topsoil Podcast. In response to Trent's question, we'll just kind of keep this going back and forth, answering questions and provide some good feedback. Love your questions too. As we're getting season two really rolling here in conjunction with the Global Ag Network and putting all of our content out there on their platform. So we'll keep the conversation flowing. In the last episode, Trent wanted to know kind of what I'm seeing with cover crop takeaways as we're implementing cover crops into the farm, as we're utilizing cover crops a lot more and more. What are we learning? What are we seeing, especially when it comes to data? So my company, Continuum Ag, does a lot of soil sampling, especially with the Haney soil health test. We've actually got some cover crop trials where we're pulling weekly soil sampling, which is just a ridiculous amount, but it's awesome. Really learning and trying to figure out how do those nutrients cycle as driven by that management practice, especially cover crops, the weather, and the soil biology. Those things are really going to impact nutrient cycling. The products that we're using are going to impact that as well, so we're learning about a lot of products as well. But with cover crops, I think that's one major issue, you know, that we've got to overcome is how do I logistically and economically implement a cover crop into my current farming operation. Part of that logistics, you know, is how do I get my planter set up? How much do I apply? When do I do it? How do I kill it? What seeds do I use? Those are good questions to relay to Trent, to your neighbors, to your local agronomist, soil health agronomist, and Twitter is really a great spot for that. There's a lot of good Facebook groups as well to get some good feedback on cover crop specifics, and definitely reach out to us anytime as well. I think when it looks at how does that cover crop impact my economics, that's where I like to tie in. How is it going to impact not only my yield at the end of the day? And I think we can see yield benefit, and I want to get there quickly. Within 3 years is ideal. This year we raised 273 bushel corn planted into a green living cover crop, so I know it can definitely happen. That's up from about 245 bushel 2 years ago. So we're really doing well, majorly building our soils and that soil's ability to produce a heck of a lot of grain. Part of the economics in, you know, so as far as implementing cover crop, overcome those logistics and economic issues and make sure that you're dialed in and do your homework and start small, learn, but we definitely need to do things better. We definitely need to use a lot more cover crop. As a consumer, as the market continues to demand more cover crops, we're going to have to be able to supply that need. Part of the economics that we got to overcome is how is that cover crop influencing some of my other inputs, especially nutrients. So we do weekly soil sampling to look at that. That cover crop is, of course, tying up nitrogen and phosphorus, micronutrients as well, and just all of our nutrients. You know, it's going to utilize those things. That's what we want. We want to utilize the leftover nutrients or pull nutrients out of the ground, pull nutrients from deeper in the soil, get that soil to interact and get the biological system really to work better for us. And what I've seen is even with relatively small cover crop, you know, only 6 to 10 inches tall, from the research that I've been seeing, we've been tying up about 10 to 20 to 25 units of nitrogen per acre, which is nice for a very small cover crop. Most of that is cereal rye. Now we're experimenting with wheat as well. But on average, what I've seen with a relatively lower stand of cereal rye, we're planting about 25 to 35 pounds of cereal rye per acre, growing it up about 10 inches tall. We're tying up about 20, 25 pounds of nitrogen. So very important information to know that you're going to have a little bit less availability at the beginning of the year. But that's okay because our corn does not need a lot of nitrogen at the beginning of the year, but it still is very vulnerable, and we've seen some major C-to-N ratio issues and carbon penalty issues in that early part of the year if you don't account for some of that nutrient tie-up. So in that 10 to, you know, about 10-inch cover crop, tying up about 20, 25 units of nitrogen. So, you know, you'll want to supplement that with your planter, or with your burn down, or in some pre-applied nitrogen. We've been able to overcome it with a strip till situation, with just better nutrient placement of the nitrogen that we have pre-applied, being right there in a strip, readily available to our little corn crop that's coming. What's been one of my main takeaways, really more of a direct answer to Trent's question, is with weekly soil sampling, I can literally point on the graphs exactly when we terminated the cover crop. It's amazing because we are seeing the nutrients return back to the soil at that time frame. There's a quick little jolt of nutrients that go back into the soil. And I did not think that we would see it quite that early. And maybe we're stimulating microbes or stimulating the biology, but this year, quite consistently, we saw that right when we terminated, within a couple days, we had a little burst of nutrients coming back into the soil. And that difference is about a 10 to 15 pound of nitrogen difference, is what I was seeing, about a 10 to 15 pounds of nitrogen release into the soil and coming available to our crop, which is pretty awesome. For a little initial corn, you know, early stages of corn development, that little bit is about what we need. So just trying to dial that in and account for it. So what I'm utilizing going forward is that we are tying up a little bit of nutrients. We're working on not terminating our cover crop until after we plant our corn into it. So terminating about 1 to 3 days after planting is when we're terminating our cover crop. For the most part, we're still using Roundup for that. We've used a little bit of other things as well. Trying some things with Gramoxone, which is Paraquat. So trying a little bit of that, but Roundup still continues to be the easy way to get our grass-type cover crops killed. What we're seeing and where I recommend guys go to is based on that initial cover crop tie-up, there's a good opportunity to do some soil testing right before planting, you know, about a week before, week to 10 days before planting, so we get some of that data back and adjust any starter that's going on or adjust some nutrients going on with your burn down at that point based on nutrient tie-up, based on how tall your cover crop is getting. And then what I do is we're not necessarily overall adding an extra, you know, 20 or 40 units of nitrogen because of the nutrient tie-up. We're more so moving the timing of the nutrient application based on that cover crop tie-up. So I'm going to move 20 to 30 units away from my side dress application. I'm going to just put it on up front just to overcome that nutrient tie-up and to make sure that I'm not holding myself short. I don't want to hurt myself. I don't want to put on more nitrogen because it's going to release. It's being tied up in that cover crop. It's helping to cycle for us, and it does release pretty quickly. Like I said, even an initial release, and then I'm seeing more release all the way through June and early July. If we have really big cover crop, some of that's not releasing until August. But with a smaller cover crop, especially if you got good biological activity, you're going to release that quickly. So I think that's my biggest takeaway, you know, is that how quickly some of those nutrients can come back into the soil is pretty awesome. So just accounting for that in your cover crop, do the soil samples, do the tissue samples of your cover crop and learn about how much is being tied up. Experiment a little bit too, you know, change around those starter rates, change around the nutrients going on with your burn down or going on pre-applied, do your own trials, and we'd love to help facilitate that conversation. My question here for today, going back to Trent, is talking about marketing and how do we make money. You know, a lot of guys right now sitting with pretty full bins, especially down in Southeast Iowa. For the most part, I had a pretty darn good year with yields in my little area of Southeast Iowa and Washington County. Good yields, full bins, and still going to be a struggle to make very much money because the crop is just not worth hardly anything. So Trent, you know, what are your thoughts on marketing grain? How do we do this better? What's going to come? And I guess tying in a little bit to getting better control of that marketability, setting up those direct to consumer markets, diversifying a little bit and finding those premiums. There's definitely some things coming and I've got some feedback on it as well, but what are your thoughts right now, I guess, as far as looking at the grain that we've gotten, how do we get it marketed? Because as now a young farmer and pulled my first corn and soybean crop off of my farm here this year that I bought a little acreage last summer, I'm trying to figure out how the heck do I make any money on it. And got to figure out how we're going to find a little bit of margin to keep getting through, so that way we've got the tools that we need to continue expanding and do better in our operation. So, Trent, I guess, what's your thoughts on marketing here as we go through this fall? Everyone, thanks for listening, and look forward to Trent's response and putting out more content. We'd love to have your questions as well and foster better conversation here as we go through this winter and think about continuing to expand, do better, and improve global soils as we go into 2019. Thanks.